Welcome to night 20 of the 1001 Nights podcast. Each episode, we bring you the ancient mythologies of the Arabian Nights, as reinterpreted by modern authors. This week, we feature the story of the Second Lady of Baghdad by Claire Kishel, and the story of the Porter by Marissa Dobson. Tonight, we are doing things a little bit differently. Instead of finishing one story and starting the next, we will be completing the story of Cole the Porter, and with it, the third chapter. Next week, we will release a special episode with commentary on the original tales of Chapter 3, and then, in the episodes to come, we will be featuring some wonderful standalone stories from a variety of authors and storytellers. We are also including a survey on our website, and we would very much appreciate it if listeners would please take a few minutes to fill it out. It can be found at 1001nightspodcast.com. And now, back to night 20. The stories of the 1001 Nights are famously told by Scheherazade to enrapture the Sultan in a heroic effort to forestall her execution and save her people. In case you need a reminder, Cole the Porter had found himself the guest of three rich and beautiful women who, during their night of partying, performed strange and disturbing acts. Two of the other guests at the party were actually investigators, and when dawn came, they called the three women in for questioning. The mistress of the house told them about how she was cursed into beating her sisters, who had been transformed into dogs, every night. The second lady of the house had told them how she had married a rich man who passed away suddenly. She described how she ended up being brought to his cousin's house by a strange old lady, and how she had been pressured into entering a marriage with her dead husband's cousin. But before she could finish her tale, morning dawned, and Scheherazade fell silent. Such was the Sultan's desire to hear the end of the story that he allowed her to live for one more day, so that she could finish her tale the following evening. And so we come to the 20th night. Scheherazade lies gently beside the Sultan in their grand bed. A single candle flickers lazily, casting echoes of the intricate carvings in the mahogany onto the rich cloth trappings that hang down all around them.
Shall I continue to tell you the story of Cole the Porter and the ladies of Baghdad, my love?
The Sultan smiled and nodded, for he had come to look forward to these stories in the dark of night. And thus, Scheherazade began.
I should confess, this man also looked like my husband did, in those old pictures when he was young and very handsome. Maybe part of me thought I should start again. Wouldn't having a child with his cousin, with his family, be the closest I could get to having a child with him? I nodded, and an old man came out to perform the ceremony. I remember none of it except that my black veil was replaced with a white one. But I still had on my black silk dress. I got crumbs on it from the rich white cake I had brought myself. My new husband had me sign the wedding contract that evening. I didn't read it, but he made me look at one clause in particular. It was a vow to never give any of my love to any other man. And at that time, I remember thinking it was funny. I felt like I had no love to give to anyone. But love is a funny thing, says all the old cliches and songs. It's not a well, it's a field. Even if it is once desolate and parched, it can still start to regrow, start to be fertile once again. That night, my new husband ripped my morning dress in half. He made me watch. He ripped it in half and he burned it as I stood there naked, arms around myself. As I cried, he took me into the bed and used my tears to moisten me, then used his mouth to stop my grief. I loved him. I must admit, I learned to love him. What do we do as women? Do we make ourselves love those who conquer us? Is it a way to give ourselves back some choice? Loving someone can be an act of contrition. He didn't let me leave the country house for months. At night, I would smell the city on his skin, the footstalls, a certain sweat of commerce. I tried to inhale as much of it as possible. I tried to get pregnant with the city. After 3 months of isolation, I begged him to let me go into town. I told him I wanted to buy him a birthday present. I told him it was not something I could ask someone else to do. He agreed if I would go with his mother, the old woman who had brought me to this place in the first place. She held my hand in the marketplace. It reminded me of when I was a child, gripping my own mother's hand in the supermarket, terrified I would lose her. The old woman stopped at one shop. A man in blue silk came out, and she had him place silk scarves on my skin. I tried to protest it wasn't for me I was shopping for, but my husband's mother winked. There are some secrets that are fun to have. There was one scarf in particular. Cloudy like a dove, it seemed to wrap itself around my skin, and I had no intention of letting it go. My mother-in-law tried to haggle, but the man refused payment.
"Just a kiss," he said. "Just let me kiss her."
I did say no, but I had been so used to no one listening, I wasn't even sure if I had a voice that could be heard on human frequency.
"Let him kiss you. There's no harm."
My mother-in-law was impatient. I have to remember to forgive myself. Honestly, I was so used to obeying orders, to never questioning what I wanted, it was hard to remember that I had a will. He leaned over for a kiss. I turned my cheek to him, smelled his sourness, earthy, pungent. He laid his lips upon my cheek softly for a moment, and then hard. A piece of my fleshy softness was suddenly in his mouth. Suddenly, I could feel my teeth exposed to wind. Oh, I thought in shock. A new orifice. I passed out from the pain. And when I came to, I was in the car. My mother-in-law holding a wet towel to my forehead. A man, she said he was a doctor, holding gauze to my empty cheek. But as he pressed on my cheek, I could feel his other hardness pressing on my thigh. Maybe this would be the last time, I thought. Maybe after this injury, my beauty would be gone and no one would want to mark me. No one would want to make me theirs. I thought that that would have been a relief. My mother-in-law wanted to hide me. She told me to tell my husband that a mule had kicked me in the mouth, but I hadn't the words. We arrived at the country house and he was there in the driveway. In the fog, it looked as if steam was rising from his skin.
"A mule kicked her in the teeth,"
she proclaimed before I could say anything.
"I'll have all the mules and mule drivers killed this very evening."
I shook my head. There was no mule.
"No, it was a knife thrower, one of those circus clowns." "I will have the circuses shut down and all the clowns shot full of lead."
I shook my head. There was no clown.
"It may have been a runaway convict. Escaped from prison with a knife. All convicts will be executed. I will see to it."
I spoke up. The hole in my teeth made my voice breathy and unmine. "I let a man kiss me in the marketplace. It wasn't anything, but then he bit me to make it permanent. Since you would kill all these men your mother lies about with no proof or evidence, I hope it is a testimony of your true love. The man who did this to me, the real man, will you kill him?" My new husband shook his head in fury.
"You have voided the contract. There is no more protection I have for you."
He gestured toward his servant who held a whip. Someone must have seen me at the marketplace. Someone must have told him. He was already prepared. His servant whipped me using the whip for the stallion I had given him. When the servant paused for a breath, my husband screamed threats to the servant and his own family. By the end of it, the rest of my skin matched the horror of my cheek. I gleamed no longer. I would never gleam again.
"Bring out a knife,"
he said.
"I will cut her in two."
I lifted my head. "Husband, I loved you, and I love you, and I have given myself to you, and I am yours. You stole me, but I forgave you for it, and I will bear your children, and they will bear your name, and I am happy for it. Are you so cruel to erase all that? For a thing that someone has done to your wife? It was done to me. I to it, and in this world I am in, I have no power. Others make my fate. You make my fate, and you are so cruel to end because of another man? If you kill me, I command you, right on my tombstone, this is she who was a slave to love, so that everyone who passes knows what love can do. My ghost will haunt you if you don't do what I say. He looked through me.
It's your fault. I'm not a man who shares my property with other men. Kill her.
I bent my neck, tried to focus on the smell of the dirt, my future home. Then, a flush of realization ran through my throbbing skin. I looked up. You wanted me to break our contract. Did you hire the man in the blue silk? Was all our marriage a sham, a revenge to get your cousin's property? My new husband took the knife from the servant and held it to my neck.
He had already tainted you before I got to you. No matter how deep I climbed in, you didn't have a part inside that was just for me.
His mother screamed, "Stop it! Stop it right now! You can't kill her! If there's any evidence pointing towards you, don't make me a mother to a prisoner myself." I like to think that she was just appealing to his way of thinking, his way of consequences. I'd like to think that she loved me, felt badly for bringing me to this country house. I like to think that she too had never known her voice to carry weight. He stopped. He dropped the knife and took the whip again, and in fury beat me harder than his servant. 100 times worse, over and over again, until the whip broke in his hands and he threw it away.
You will remember me, and any man looking at you will turn away in disgust. That's my legacy.
Oh, that's what I remember him saying. Maybe he had said nothing at all. But in the way he looked at me, my broken body, his handiwork, I could tell he was proud. Someone drove me back to my house, its splendor welcoming me and mocking me at the same time. There were months that passed only in images. A drink of water, the smell of camphor, peppermint oil on my cheeks and tongue. My servants worked hard to keep me alive. They knew that I was only rich as long as I held breath. 9 months later, my skin was almost as good as new. You could only see my ugliness in a certain kind of light. There was a certain ropey thickness to my skin that I gave up on trying to cover up. 9 months later, I went back to the country house. I don't know why, just to see where it had happened, to see where I had become the person I am now. The house was gone, just a pile of ash where it had once been. I wondered if I had dreamt the fire and burned them all in my sleep. There are stranger things that have happened in this world. All the strength I had built up over those months vanished when I saw that mound of dirt. It's like I had needed it to be there. I had wanted to show it that I couldn't be destroyed. But when it was gone, its brutal walls and bright corners vanished. It was like if something was supposed to last for centuries couldn't make it through a season, how could I? I was exhausted. Luckily, my sister offered to take me in, a half-sister I had barely known growing up, a sister who had never made me play the bridegroom. She told me her own story, the stories of her own sisters, and I felt safe with her, strong. Here in this new house, we never say the words marriage or husband. Thank God, we say to each other every night. Thank God we are alive. Thank God it is over. Thank God we are here. Thank God here we are allowed to exist.
Tears dripped onto Cole's clasped hands. He turned to see if the three dealers had also been listening, and saw by their faces that they had heard it all. Cole stood, his hands on the doorknob, and walked into the room. Three ladies, dressed in floor-length silk robes, looked up at his arrival. Erica smiled at him, the wetness of her cheeks making him wish for pockets full of tissues.
"Okay, well, now that we're all here..."
Khalil wagged his eyebrows at Cole and the posse of half-blinded men.
"Here's what we'll do. We'll have to split you three up for safety's sake. For Miss Gloria here, we have a safe house disguised as an animal sanctuary a few hours west of D.C. She can take the dogs there and pose as a volunteer until the smoke blows over. Miss Erica..."
"She'll come with me, sir."
Cole never felt such certainty before. This honey was for him, and their life together would be new and grand and none of the pain of the past.
"Well, I got family down in North Carolina. We're set up there. Nobody will think nothing of it."
Erica got up slowly, walking into his open arms, and rested her head in the bend in his neck. There were no words to follow words.
"Okay, then, I suppose that's one solution."
Khalil let out a very short, tired laugh.
"And now we come to you, Mistress Kate. I think you have a very, very useful skill set for our organization. Would you, with some training of course, be interested in working in our Hong Kong office? With the rising China, we need all the help we can get."
Khalil and Jafar nodded in sync, as if they'd practiced this ask. The room held its breath. A full minute passed.
I will.
"I'll do it on condition that these boys can come with me. I need staff for the work you need me to do. I must leave my girls behind, as you say. I need fixers, loyal and brave, and I saw how they behave themselves tonight. I think these three deserve another chance as part of my household." She cast her lovely almond eyes on the three half-blind men. They quivered as one, falling on their knees around her like petals. In a flash, they saw their future with the mistress. Hotel suites, private planes, and every night a beautiful and demanding woman who knew their deepest secrets and still kept them close.
And with that, we come to the end of Chapter 3. The 1001 Nights podcast is produced by Morgan Dubin and me, Nathan Kane. Scheherazade is played by the incredibly talented Ariel Siegel. The story of the Second Lady of Baghdad was written by Claire Kishel. The story of Cole the Porter and the Ladies of Baghdad was written by Marissa Dobson. The music on the 1001 Nights podcast is generously contributed by Heyban Lara Lemmy, Pharaoh's Daughter, and Eric Hopton. To find out more about the 1001 Nights podcast, visit us online at 1001nightspodcast.com. This week, we have an exciting survey for you in our show notes. You can also find the survey on our website. We would really appreciate it if you took a moment to fill it out, tell us what you think of the podcast, and what you'd like to hear in episodes to come. I overheard our producer Morgan on the phone with a listener, desperately trying to get them to fill out the survey we posted. "We rely on listeners," she explained.
"And in this world I'm in, I have no power. Others make my fate. You make my fate."
So please, help Morgan. Help the podcast. Help Scheherazade. Fill out our survey. All right, that will do it for Night 20 and the end of Chapter 3 for the 1001 Nights podcast. Thank you so much for listening. And... good morning.